Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marches never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again, this time on the near side, for another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't Lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
A man of odd circumstance, a victim of guilt. Today we're looking at the top 10 richest black billionaires in the world. Welcome to Alux.com, the place where future billionaires come to get inspired. Hey there, Aluxers. Welcome back to our channel for another video where we highlight some of the richest people in the world. Today we have a special subject going on, sensitive to some but of great importance. Since we're digging into black culture today and the richest black people that are in the world as we speak. Many famous billionaires are white, but as the years go by, more and more black people rise up and take over industries such as music, media, real estate, or oil. Since they were oppressed and enslaved for so many years by white Americans and Europeans, only a few of them have managed to break the cycle so far and prove to everyone they're not inferior just because of their skin color. It's taking a lot longer than it should, but nowadays there's lots of diversity in most aspects of life regarding racism. Some black people are now wealthy, respectable businessmen, teachers, doctors, lawyers, artists, even presidents. They bring great value and put up hard work to prove themselves. And even though it's not fair for them, it is what it is, and we can make the best of what we've got and make it better. From inspirational men like Martin Luther King, Barack Obama, or Usain Bolt, we learn that we are all the same, and racism only clouds our mind, preventing us from seeing true potential and true talent. Today we're focusing on the richest and most extravagant black people from both the U.S. and Africa, people that are now billionaires and run major companies. Let's go. If you're new here, welcome. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Instagram at Alux. Number 10, Mohammed Ibrahim. Net worth, $1.2 billion. Coming in at number 10, we find Mohammed Ibrahim, a Sudanese-British businessman who now lives in the lavish and luxurious Monaco, alongside rich people like art dealer David Named or Formula One driver Lewis Hamilton. Mohammed Ibrahim is the co-founder of Celtel, one of the biggest telecommunications companies in Africa that operates in 14 countries. In 2005, he sold the company to Zain for $3.4 billion and began working with the UN, helping to spread the full benefits of broadband services to unconnected people throughout the world, and especially in Africa. now at 72 years old. He's a philanthropist and a dedicated activist with a fortune of $1.2 billion, making him one of the richest men in Africa. Number 9. Fulorunsho Alakija. Net worth $1.5 billion. The first black female billionaire is Fulorunsho Alakija, a Nigerian female businesswoman. She's the first lady on our list, and given the fact she made it all by herself in a country where most women are oppressed or housewives, she has our eternal respect. Her fortune comes from Fanfa oil, fashion, and printing, and she's been listed as one of the richest females in the world and in Africa. Although her life story is not dramatic or worthy of an Oscar movie, her business and financial achievements are quite impressive. She founded her first company, Supreme Stitches, and ended up dressing the most influential people in the country, like Mariam Babangida, Nigeria's former military president Ibrahim Babangida's wife. From then on, she asked for an oil prospecting license, and things escalated quickly, and she's not planning on stopping anytime soon. At 66 years old, she's happily married with children, currently living in Lagos, Nigeria, with her family and her business empire of $1.5 billion that she's worked so hard to make. Number 8. Michael Jordan. Net worth $1.7 billion. Besides basketball fans and Americans, all people on this planet probably know a few things about the greatest basketball player, Michael Jordan. He paved the path for so many young kids aspiring to be just like him, and now even though he's retired, his fame and records are still remembered. Playing basketball and netting important sponsorship deals like the one he has with Nike brought him roughly $1.7 billion, as Forbes has estimated. Even today, he still makes more money than any other active player in the whole NBA and still has sponsorship deals with companies like Gatorade or Hanes. His Nike contract for the signature Air Jordan shoes brings him $100 million every year, and he also owns 90% of the shares of the Charlotte Hornets team, which is valued at more than $1 billion. Number 7. Patrice Motsepe. Net worth $2 billion. Heading back to Africa, we move on to Patrice Motsepe, a mining billionaire from South Africa who's the founder of African Rainbow Minerals, the company that mines for gold, ferrous metals, base metals, and platinum. He's also on the board of Harmony Gold, the 12th largest gold company in the world that secured a license to sell a replica of the precious One Ring that's featured in The Lord of the Rings. Since he's involved in the gold and expensive metals business, you can imagine he made that fortune of $2 billion pretty fast, and he's also the first black person to sign the Giving Pledge alongside billionaires like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett. Nowadays, he's a respected businessman and is often invited as a speaker to conferences and business events to talk about his career, business, and give advice to young entrepreneurs. His insights on how to make billions must be made of gold, because he sure spends a lot of time traveling and coaching. Number 6. Strive Maziiwa. Net worth $2.1 billion. Strive Maziiwa made this list because his life was a constant struggle, and he's a billionaire worth mentioning. He's also the first billionaire in his country. He's from Zimbabwe and owns the biggest telecommunications company in the country, Econet Group, that also has investments in financial services, insurance, e-commerce, renewable energy, education, Coca-Cola bottling, hospitality, and payment gateway solutions. With so much expertise and so many investments, it's no wonder that he's now a billionaire with a net worth of $2.1 billion, making him the first Zimbabwe billionaire. At 57 years old, he lives in London with his family, from where he operates everything. Together with his wife, he founded a charity organization through which they strive to help children suffering from Ebola or HIV. He's generally known as the most philanthropic and giving man that ever came from Africa, because he's constantly helping small farmers or partnering with NGOs to help other people. And that's why he deservingly gets this place on our list. Number 5. Isabel dos Santos. Net worth $2.4 billion. The second woman we have on this top list is Isabel dos Santos from Angola. She is the oldest daughter of Angola's longtime former president, José Eduardo dos Santos. And with a fortune of $2.4 billion, she's one of the richest females in the world. Even though she's not a self-made billionaire, with her net worth, she's one of the richest black people in the world by all means. Her father, José Eduardo dos Santos, played a major role in her life, helping her to get certain executive positions that were able to secure her financial future. It was not a safe move to make his daughter the head of the biggest national oil company, but it sure did pay off for her. With the money she earned, Isabel bought shares in a Portugal cement company and around 5% in Spain's Telefonica. Nowadays, she's the richest person in Angola, and people often call her the princess due to her history of being daddy's little girl and a luxury lover. Number 4. Oprah Winfrey. Net worth? $3 billion. Moving on with the girl power, we end up at Oprah Winfrey's door. This media mogul is one of the most famous people in Hollywood and the world with an incredible life story. She started out from nothing and built her billion-dollar media empire that's now estimated to be worth around $3 billion. Oprah has her own network, her TV shows, books she's written, investments, and reputation to help her get through everything. Her fans are loyal, and they trust her. People are inspired by her. They look up to her, and for so many reasons, she's been a ray of hope and the perfect PR ambassador, as she was for Sarah Blakely, the founder of Spanx. She's also a native philanthropist and one of the most powerful women in the U.S. At this point, nothing can stop Oprah on running for office in the future, as some people speculate she may do. She basically can sell anything. She is vetted. She's rich and an active citizen. Pretty much the perfect candidate after Donald Trump. And since we're talking about this great woman, we thought you'd like to learn some more about her and her life struggles that led her to where she is today. Click in the top right corner to watch our video all about Oprah. Number 3. Robert Smith. Net worth, $4.4 billion. Third on our list is Robert Smith, a businessman and a wealthy investor. Not a very unique name, but a very rich and smart man. He's a former Goldman Sachs banker and the founder and CEO of Vista Equity Partners, a company that has over $30 billion in assets. According to Forbes, his net worth is around $4.4 billion, and they even included him on their 100 Greatest Living Business Minds list. Considering the amount of money he's made so far, he's only 55 years old. He began dedicating a big part of his life to charity work. He's also a part of the Giving Pledge, and has been awarded multiple times for his philanthropic acts towards education. One of his biggest donations so far is the $50 million he donated to Cornell University, where he graduated from. His personal life is quite interesting as well. He's married to a former Playboy playmate, with whom he has 5 children, and they all live in a $20 million mansion in Malibu. Looks like the American dream still exists for some people. Number 2. Mike Adenuga. Net worth, $4.5 billion. Second to last, we have Mike Adenuga, Nigeria's second richest man. With his $4.5 billion fortune, many people might have heard of him, since he's been mentioned by Forbes magazine quite a bit. His main interest is mostly in oil, real estate, banking, and telecommunications. Starting from almost nothing, he worked as a taxi driver during university to raise money for his tuition, and a few smart decisions later, he's now the most respected and wealthy man in the country. He now owns Con Oil Producing, one of the largest oil companies in the Nigerian Delta. In spite of all the money laundering rumors and millions of dollars of debt that his company faced a few years ago, he's still acknowledged as one of the best entrepreneurs and the richest men in Africa. He's not the richest, like our next entry is, but he certainly can't complain. Number 1. Aliko Dangote. Net worth, $12.2 billion. Out of all the richest people on this top list, there can only be one in the highest position, and he is, of course, Aliko Dangote, the notorious Nigerian businessman and investor. With a net worth of $12.2 billion, he's ranked by Forbes as the 100th richest man in the world and the richest man in Africa. He made his fortune by founding the largest African cement company. Aliko Dangote is also involved in sugar, salt, flour, beverages, and packaged food companies, so his bank accounts and leading position are safe. He's said to have donated almost $1 million so far to help halt the Ebola virus spread in Africa, and sources also state he's interested in buying English football club Arsenal. He's also been married 4 times and currently has 3 children that will proudly inherit his billions. Well, Aluxers, that's a wrap on the richest black billionaires in the world. Now, we're curious to see which one of the ladies in our top list do you think will rank out number one first? Oprah Winfrey or Isabel Dos Santos? Leave us your thoughts in the comments below. And of course, for sticking with us all the way to the end, you know you get a bonus. Here it is. Barack Obama. Net worth, $40 million. The former president of the United States of America made the list because he's the first black president the USA has ever had. So we'll let the fact that he's not actually a billionaire slide for now. Since the history of slavery in the USA is so deeply rooted in everyone's minds, Obama's move to run for office was viewed as very bold and risky. Yes, there are a lot of black people in America that would vote for him, and they did, but there's also a lot of racism and the fact that no other black person has ever done it before. Luckily for him, though, his story, his message, and his life inspired many more and managed to secure 2 terms in the White House from 2008 to 2016. With his charm and his amazing wife by his side, he now has roughly $40 million in his bank account, all coming from book deals. His $392,000 yearly salary for being president and other investments, as well as his wife's earnings. In over 10 years, he secured a pretty decent life for his family, and since he's still active, more money will probably be coming his way. Even though people still have mixed feelings about his achievements, we have to admit he tried to offer free healthcare, ended 2 wars, and donated almost 10% of his earnings to charity. So, I'd say that's a pretty good job. Thank you for spending some time with us, Aluxer. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss a video. If you want more, we handpicked these videos you might enjoy. Or head over to alux.com for the best in fine living content on the planet. Be a part of the largest community of luxury enthusiasts in the world and tell your story.
Top 5 Jamaican Billionaires and Their Net Worth. Jamaica may be a developing country, but there's plenty of wealth on this little rock. While there is a sizable middle class, there is no shortage of people who are raking in the cash. Here are 5 Jamaicans who have broken the billion-dollar mark. Welcome back to Elite Jamaica, the place you come to learn about Jamaica and Jamaicans. If it's your first time joining me here, consider subscribing to the channel by clicking that red subscribe button. And remember to turn on notifications by clicking that bell icon so you never miss any of my updates. Number 5. John Joey Issa. Estimated net worth, US dollar, $15 million. That's Jamaican $1.8 billion. Where his money comes from, tourism and the gas. Born into a wealthy family, Joey Issa started the Cool Oasis petrol stations in 1994 and later acquired several other petrol stations under his Cool brand. His portfolio has since grown to become a multi-billionaire entity consisting of more than 60 companies, including automotive and household products. As an integral part of the Super Club's all-inclusive resort chain founded by his father, John Issa, Joey, has introduced several philanthropic programs to help the less fortunate. Number 4. Joseph Matalon. Estimated net worth, US dollar, $22 million. That's Jamaican $2.7 billion. Where his money comes from? Banking, finance, and investments. Matalon has been involved in the Jamaican business community for about 3 decades, serving as a chairman of the ICD Group, an investment holding company, the British Caribbean Insurance Company, and the Development Bank of Jamaica. As president of the private sector organization, Matalon was influential in the creation of the government policy that impacted the business climate in Jamaica. He has served on the board of several companies and as an advisor to the government on economic issues. Number 3. Usain Bolt. Estimated net worth, US $60 million. That's Jamaican $7.5 billion. Where his money comes from? Sports prize money, appearance fees, and endorsements. In a record-breaking career that lasted more than 10 years, Bolt became the highest-earning track athlete in history. At the height of his career, he was reported to be earning $33 million a year from appearances, prize money, and endorsements. He has parlayed his winning charisma into off-the-track lucrative contracts with Gatorade, U-Bolt, Virgin Media, and various other companies. His biggest source of income comes from longtime sponsor, German footwear brand Puma, which he reportedly earns up to $10 million annually in a deal that will last until 2025. Bolt also gets residual earnings from his character in the Temple Run gaming franchise. Number 2. Gordon Butch Stewart. Estimated net worth, US $1 billion. That's Jamaican $120 billion. Where his money comes from? Tourism and other businesses. Butch Stewart is the founder of the Sandals Resort Hotel chain, an early pioneer in the all-inclusive concept. He started by selling air conditioners before opening his first hotel in Montego Bay in the early 80s. Today, the Sandals Resorts International operates 5 brands and 24 properties in 7 countries. His portfolio includes the Jamaica Observer newspaper, ATL Automotive, and about 20 other companies that fall under the Appliance Traders Group. Number 1. Michael Lee Chin. Estimated net worth, US $1.8 billion. That's Jamaican $220 billion. Where his money comes from? Banking and investments. In his early years, Michael Lee Chin was a road engineer for the Jamaican government. Before he founded Portland Holdings, a privately held investment company, he made his fortune by investing in the financial companies including National Commercial Bank, in which he owns a majority stake. He acquired the Canadian Wealth Management Fund, AIC Limited, in 1987 and grew the company's assets from $1 million to $10 billion in 2002. He has quietly built up his real estate portfolio over the years, amassing more than 200 acres in Jamaica and homes in Canada and Florida. Thank you for joining me again, guys. I really do hope you enjoyed this video. If so, please give it a like or a thumbs up. And remember to subscribe to Elite Jamaica for new upcoming videos. Guys, I'm not at my regular location in my bedroom making my videos at the moment, so there's a lot of background noise as I am in the country, as I told you guys before. So thank you for joining me again, and I really appreciate it. Until next time, I am Alex. Bless.
No angel, but you got a halo. When it starts like this, I really wanna be right here.
Why does it look like you're in like some type of construction type thing? Well, your girl got her a little like, you gonna, keep watching the video. I'ma just do this like short little intro. I recently just decided to do this. This was kind of like a last minute thing. Like, this isn't nothing I've been saving up for or anything like that. I came across one and like I really liked it. I was just showing it to my mom like, and we got to thinking like, I'm in college. I have a son, of course, a teen mother, and like having my own space, but still not having to be away from my mom because like I love her and like I depend on her for almost everything that I do. This was a good alternative to that. So what we did was we looked for them, we browsed around.
We found one at first, but it didn't really work out, and I was like super bummed. And then we found this one, which is like even better. I'm gonna show y'all what it looked like before. I'm gonna insert a few pictures right here while I'm talking. So before it, we bought it already completely finished, so we didn't have to go in and do the hardwood, because the way that they started out, I'm gonna insert a picture right here, it's kind of like this up here. So the whole building was like this. So this is like a shed, a tiny home build, that type of thing. We didn't have to do that much labor again, because like the wall and the insulin, it is insulated. It has wall, it has flooring. The top is actually done to it. So that's the top. Everything was already done, which is a huge blessing, okay? Because getting hardwood and doing the walls, insulating, is a bunch of money. When I say a bunch, it is a bunch. I tried to do one myself before, me and my sister, like a couple years back, and the money and getting the insulation, the flooring, and all that was just, woo. If you can find one that's already done, I advise you just to get it if you're looking into getting something like this. The marketplace is a really good thing. I got a great deal on this. Usually they run for about $10,000 to $15,000, but I only paid around $5,000 for mine. Honey, $5,000, that is great. So we're gonna get right into the video, and I'm about to give y'all a little tour so y'all can see how it goes down in my little house, my little, yeah.
All right, guys, so I'm gonna start off with that outside. This is pretty dark because I am recording at nighttime. You know, I just have a window. I have electric throughout the whole thing, so there's like a plug right there for that. I have another plug. It runs all the way to the back. I have a mailbox, but nobody wants to put it up for me, so I'm gonna set that right there. All right, and this is my door. It has like a window on it as well. I have like a little welcome mat too, so you know, wipe your feet before you come in. All right, so this is it. All right, so it's all kind of like one room. It's not like different rooms or anything like that. I didn't feel like I needed anything that big, because it's just me and it's just Kate. So we can start over here in the TV area. I have a TV. It's supposed to be on the wall. It's sitting on the thing. It's not going to be like that. Eventually somebody's going to put it on the wall. I'm too little to put it on the wall. So down here we just have like magazines, my Polaroid camera, my high school diploma, some like random books just for like kind of decoration. We have this right here with all like the smell good stuff and my candle. I need a new candle. They always take this out and they don't put it back up. But yeah, so, and then up under there is like bags, because I use bags for trash and things like that. Just like a convenient. A convenient space to put right there, put the blankets and pillows on top. And then because it's so tiny in here, you have to make what you got with storage. So that's a good storage thing right here. Okay, on this side, we have the living room area. So I have a couch right here. This is actually also a pull-out couch. Hold on. Ta-da! So it also turns into a bed, which is great for, again, when my sisters come over. Because I do like to stay in here sometimes. Or if I have a friend over, I don't have any friends. But if I did, this is where they would sleep. Right back up, just like that. I got this couch from Walmart for only $98, y'all, which is like really good because it's really convenient. It really fits the space well, so it's not like too crowded in here. Like, it's still a good enough space. On this side, I have my favorite freaking blanket. Oh my gosh, y'all, this is so like, this is like the best blanket in the world. And I got this from Walmart as well. And then I have like a little basket. I don't remember where I got this from. I think it's Ross. And this right here is great for storage. As you can see, I have a lot of crap in there. We're not going to look at it. But yeah, so I just had a blanket right there, and that's for me because I love that blanket. And then right here we have my bed. I had to downsize to like a twin bed because of my other room. As y'all seen in my twin video, I had a bigger bed, but if I had a bigger bed, it would take up this whole space. And it's just me and Kaden. Sometimes Kaden sleeps on the couch. So, Yeah, we can see. Okay, well, yeah. I got these from...
What's up? TJ Maxx.
No one's TJ Maxx. I think it's Burke's Outlet in the mall. They were only like $5. Right here, I got this from Five Below. That's if y'all don't want to decorate anything, go to Five Below, go to Ross, go to Walmart, and go to Target. That's the only place I went to get all this stuff. I think I did it under like $600. Like the whole everything. And that's the pots, the pans, the you'll see all that stuff later. But yeah. So I got this from Five Below, and it says YouTube Marie TV. If we had the R, fell off, I have to replace it, but it's up in the storage area.
Okay.
And shut up. I'm gonna put another art. And then we have my Instagram, Bad Gal Marie. Y'all go follow me. Another thing I have right here that is like really cool, this. So you know how you always lose a charger base? I don't have to worry about that because I have my own plug, and it came like this. Again, like I said in the intro, everything was already fully done in here. I didn't have to do like the hardwood floors or anything like that. All right, and right here, I just have to put my toes in there. I have this. I got this from Polar Bear Rug, whatever you want to call it. And then I have a mirror right here. And then I have another mirror right here. Hey. And then I have like a little light up candle and a heater. And it was only, been cold. We turned it on one time. We turned the heater on one time and like it heated the whole building. Like it started getting hot. I had to unplug it. And then for when it's too hot, which I usually, this works very well. It cools like the whole thing. Like seriously, it gets too cold in here. My sister
showed
me. It gets way too cold. So we have to turn it off. Like it's really good. I have really good heating and airing in here without having to have like a big unit or anything. So now let's go over to like the kitchen area. Right here is the good, baby. This is the good. This is where you know. I haven't even cooked here yet. I'm waiting to make a video. Make this video first, and then my first time cooking, I'm gonna make a video for that, cooking in the tiny house. So stay tuned for that. But I have all my food. I have candy, snacks, cereal, all that good stuff. I have a 1-year-old and he's three. Here, if you remember when I cleaned up my room, this was actually my makeup chair, my makeup desk, and I turned it into like a probably more than that, and I was like, I don't need a huge table in here. So we came home, and my mom was like, go get that desk, and we put it right here, and it worked perfectly. So all I had to do was buy this chair, and I got this chair from Walmart, and this chair cover from Walmart. Right here, I have a little napkin holder with all my mail and things, and then also the napkins. I just bought this yesterday. Isn't this so cute? I do not care, because it's getting spooky season, so I went ahead and I bought some popcorn things, you know, because we finna watch movies in here. Like, it's a whole vibe in here. So the vibe is just, like, amazing. Like, it's still, like, a free spirit. Like, it's just cool. Like, okay, and then up here I have my... This is just something my mom wrote.
What
right
is that?
Here. These are for candles. I don't have candles for them yet. I'm going to buy candles. As y'all can see before, my candle is, like, completely done for. And then I have my seasonings back here. And my pots and pans are, like, fairly, really, really clean because I have not used them again. I get into this video, then we can cook. Alright, so coming over here, this is like my favorite area because like it's just so freaking cute, like a mini kitchen. Like, okay, so I have the microwave, standard microwave, and then I have this oven right here. And I did make something in here, but I didn't cook
a pizza.
Yeah, I made a pizza in here. And this like milk sprinkles.
I'm doing it.
Thing and like you stick it onto the wall, and it just made it like a really nice accent piece.
Spot, and it has lights attached inside of this thing right here too at nighttime, and it's like a really kind of chill space. I'm also, like I said, in college, so going up here, you know, studying or reading or anything like that, that is
anyway. What is that?
Okay.
cut that out. I feel like it was a good fit for me. If you don't feel like it's a good fit for you, I'm not telling you to go out and buy a tiny house and spend all your, well, I didn't spend all my money, but spend a good amount of money on doing this if it's not something you want to do. Me personally, I've always been into like tiny living, like the bus bills, the van bills, all that type of stuff. I've always been into that. Like, even my family can detest. Like, ain't that right there?
No.
And I've always wanted it, and now that I'm blessed enough to like be able to get this, is so I just felt like it was a good fit. I feel like somebody would ask, how is it living in here with Caden? Honestly, it is a way better than being in my house. My house is more stuff he can get into. He likes to go downstairs and I'm upstairs having to chase after him. He's always messing and everything. Right here in this particular space, I can sit on my bed. I can see him playing in like the living room area. He can sit on my bed. We can literally watch TV right here. He wants to run around. It's fine because it's my space. He's not like messing up my mom's stuff or anything like that. So it's like literally 100% better. I think that'll pretty much be any of the questions that y'all would have. Again, like I said, if you have any other questions, just comment below. And I literally reply to everyone because I don't do anything. I'd be bored. So if you drop a comment, I promise you, like, I will reply to it. But yeah, so...
Welcome to Camp Hugay.
This 11-year-old spent her summer turning the inside of this camper from this to this.
I was looking through an American Girl magazine, and I saw a camper for $650 for an American Girl, and it was a very nice camper. My dad said that was really expensive for us, so, he said that we could get a real camper for that amount of money. So then I went out and I started looking for one. We saw down the road a house had a camper for sale that I had been looking at for a while. So I really wanted to get it, and the guy said it was for $500. And then I told him $400 because that was what I had. And he said sold.
And the total cost of renovations thus far, $400.
We had looked on Pinterest and saw a lot of cool camper ideas. And I liked this Beachy Boho style with lots of plants and different colors and sea glass and driftwood, that style. So I liked that, and we decided to paint the camper walls white and then our kitchen cabinet turquoise. So this is my dining area. I got this from our potting shed that had dust and dead flies all over it, so we cleaned it up and that's what we got. We planted some plants from Dollar General in there. We have all of this on the back side came from our house except for that one picture back there from Dollar General. And a fun fact about these, this table and these cabinets, they flip down into a bed, and so does this. And then over here we have the kitchen, where we can't quite cook stuff yet, but it's very decorative. And this is our refrigerator, to fit inside of it. And then if we walk a little further down, we have right here, these are very nice decals that we got for $1 at the Dollar Tree. And then if we walk a little bit farther in here, we have a mirror that we painted the edges that came with the camper originally. And we have a closet over here, and it says Lauren's Little Camper. I got this sign from my neighbor who made it for me. And then we keep walking, and now we're in the bedroom. So we have four beds in here, and We got these really cute mattresses off of Etsy.
She painted most of it herself. She had her grandma come over the one day and help with the cupboards, but I would be gone for the day and I'd come home and she'd say, like, you could tell. And I'd say, how long were you in here? And she's like, oh, I painted about 4 hours straight.
Well, I'm very creative and artistic, so I love to paint and draw and stuff like that. So it kind of came to me naturally.
With this COVID thing, it's kind of interrupting her fun that she wants to have in it. But she's making the best of it.
Lauren hopes to be able to have friends over soon, but a chance to get away from home works for now.
I hope you enjoyed my camper tour. Thanks for stopping by.
This is Inside Edition Digital.
Okay, today's podcast, we're sort of like putting some type of a format to It's My House. Three times a week, we want to feature positive stories and information about black enterprises. So we're going to, I think we can do it by the end of this podcast, we're going to go over the list of black enterprises' top 100 industrial businesses. And then throughout the year, we'll be doing, let's see, the top 100 bloggers, particularly African-American bloggers, top 100 emerging industries, top 10 black townships, and I'm thinking we might even up that to 100. Not the top 10 most populated towns with black folk, but the top, these are actual townships that black people actually started, founded. So we'll start off with the top 10 of those. The top 10 emerging countries, and they can be anywhere around the globe. Top 10 extreme home manufacturers. Top 10 Generation Z. Now, all the clips, every clip I played featured basically black folk except for the last one with Laura Nelson. The reason why we did that, we're going to start featuring also Generation Z people. Laura Nelson and Marie from Marie TV. That was the last two clips I played. Marie, African-American woman, she's 19, maybe 20. She'll be 20 this year. Got pregnant when she was 15, had a child when she was 16. Or was she 16? Well, let's put it at 15. She was pregnant at 15, had a child at 16. And she went out and bought a shed and converted the shed into a tiny house. Now, she's doing well, got her own car now and independent and all that. Her son's probably about 3 years old now. Reason why I put her in there is because she's part of Generation Z. Generation Z is ages 8 to 24. They're the interrupters, or one of the interrupters, and generations to look out for, because a lot of them will surpass the appearance of Generation X and even baby boomers. Not all of them, but I think it'll be a respectable amount of them, because she's starting out life debt-free. She owns her own house with zero mortgage. Now, granted, it's in her mother's backyard. The fact that she had the ingenuity, and she's not the only one, to go out and get a shed and convert it into a tiny house. And if you watch some of her videos on her YouTube channel, which is Marie TV, and that's Marie spelled, it's one word, M-A-R-E-E TV, all one word, M-A-R-E-E TV, that's one word, Marie TV. And she covers a lot of things, but she's got two, three, four, maybe five videos on her tiny house thing. But as she stated in one of her videos, you know, it dorm rooms, college dorm rooms, typically don't have a bathroom. So her tiny house, when she built it, I haven't caught up with her recently. Maybe we'll have her on this podcast for a live stream. Didn't have a bathroom when she built it. Now you could have one now, but you know, and she's right. My college dorm, college dorm room was a bedroom, essentially, and then you go down the hallway to the dorm bathroom with the showers and commodes and urinals and face, but you know all that stuff that's in the college setup. And that's a niche. That is a niche. So she's away from home. She's home, but yet away from home, and has a sense of independence. And then she can move that. She can move her tiny house to her own patch of land if she ever decides to do that, or rent it out. So it's a great confidence builder. So she's part of Generation Z. So there's quite a few Generation Z people that are doing that. Once again, ages 8 to 24. Now, the other person, the only non-black person that we featured today was the very last audio, Laura Nelson, out of New York State. Laura was 11 years old when she bought a fixer-upper camper, did the mice, fixed it up, and now she's got her own little tiny spot, debt-free. And that's the thing here, debt-free. These are young people, Marie TV, she's in college now, but she wasn't when she was pregnant, and she wasn't when she had that child. And she wasn't when she converted that shed into a tiny house. So part of Generation Z, I don't know what the percentage is, but it's not difficult to find their videos on YouTube where before these kids or people are out of high school. And in the case of Laura Nelson, the only white person or non-black in our clips this morning, she's not even in high school. Not even in high school. She's 12 years old? Sixth grade? She's going into seventh grade, something like that? And did her first fixer-upper on a debt-free, it's a camper, right? But a lot of adults retire to campers. Sly Stone, who's made millions of dollars. I don't know if he's got them now, but he's still around. He lives in a camper, and he's old enough to be a grandfather. So that's Generation Z. So we're going to be featuring Generation Z's as long as black entrepreneurship. But we're going to cover it from a different angle than Black Enterprise, although I'll go through their top 100, see if we can rattle that off during this podcast. Let's see. And matter of fact, let's go with, now this isn't the current list. I think this is last year's. I don't know if this year's is coming out yet. But anyway, number 100, coming in at number 100, Black Enterprise. Now, this is their industrial top 100. Okay, they also, I don't know if they still have, but they still might. They also had top 100 or top dealerships, auto dealerships in the country, all right? And we're going to add some other things in there like hair salons and barbershops and all that. But anyway, so coming in at number 100 in Black Enterprises, at least the list I have. All right, this is from 2018, okay. Castle Black Construction. We have a revenue here listed by Black Enterprise at $4.7 million. And mind you now, there are probably some businesses that choose not to be listed on this list. You know, so we have to find out all the particulars on how they do this list yearly, but some of them don't, you know, choose not to be listed. Coming in at 99, Seraline Global, now let me get $5 million. They weren't previously ranked. They have 10 employees. The type of business that they're in is IT Solutions, and they're located or headquartered in San Jose, California. Sudu Logistics is SUDU. Sudu, I think that's how you pronounce it. $5.8 million. They coming in at 98. They weren't previously ranked. They have 15 employees. Amari Ruff is the CEO. The type of business that they're in is transportation and warehousing. They're based out of or headquartered out of Atlanta, Georgia. Next coming in at number 97. Black Enterprises Top 100. This is the list from 2018. COS. $6.8 million. They have 168 employees. Stephen C. Roberts is the CEO. The type of business that they're in is real estate development and telecommunications. They are headquartered out of St. Louis, Missouri. $7 million. They're coming in at 96. They have 300 employees. Chantel Adams is the CEO. They're in this healthcare business. And they're headquartered, Nurses R Us. They're headquartered in Baltimore, okay. Coming in at number 95 at $8 million in revenue yearly, Skyline Industries LLC. They have 35 employees. And they're in the contracting and construction management business. They're headquartered out of Long Island, New York. Coming in at number 94, Mosaic Global Transportation. Maurice Brewster is the CEO, 111 employees. They're in the transportation services business. They're headquartered out of San Jose, California. Coming in at number 93, Air Sheet Metal, $12 million, a little bit over $12 million in revenue. Eugene Bramblett is the CEO, and they're in the sheet metal. They're a sheet metal provider, headquartered out of Redwood City, California. Coming in at 92, BCT Partners, LLC. They have 55 employees headquartered out of Newark, New Jersey. The type of business that they're in is research, consulting, and training, technology, and analytic services. Coming in at number, 89. Matter of fact, there are three companies tied for number 89. The first one we'll talk about or we'll mention is Banneker Ventures, LLC. 40 employees. Amar A. Karim is the CEO. The type of business is construction and construction and facilities management and real estate development, headquartered out of Silver Spring, Maryland. The next one also in at number 89 is Black Enterprise. Black Enterprise has 47 employees, and the CEO is Earl Graves Jr. We're talking about second generation here. Type of business, multimedia and business conferences, and they're headquartered out of New York City. We're going to take a page out of them with the business conferences thing, with what we do. Because we got, I used to do like workshops every week. But more on that later. Okay. Coming in at also 89 because it's a three-way tie. The Biff Group Technologies, 62 employees. Robert L. Wallace is the CEO. Type of business, IT solutions, also in B-More, Baltimore, Maryland. Coming in at number 88, Networking Technology Support, $17 million, a little bit over there. Bernard Robinson is the CEO, IT Solutions Business, Midlothian, Virginia. Coming in at number 87, Premier Management Corporation, $20 million, 145 employees. Marcus Board is the CEO. Type of business that they run, financial management services, linguistics, IT solutions. They're in Columbia, Maryland, not far from Baltimore, not far from Washington, D.C. Coming in at number 86 is TD4 Electrical, LLC. They have 100 employees, and their CEO is Tommy L. Davis, Jr. Type of business is electrical contracting, headquartered out of St. Louis, Missouri. Man, St. Louis, what's happening in St. Louis? Man, that's the fourth business out of name. In the top 100. Let's see. Coming in at number 85, DigiFlight, Inc., $20 million, a little bit over $20 million, also out of Columbia, Maryland. Type of business, IT and security solutions, Stanford Oliver is the CEO. Employees, they got this. That's why they have 20.970. All right. 84 Logistics Systems, a little bit over $21 million. They have 132 employees. Lawrence Wilkinson is the CEO, Logistics Management, headquartered in Washington, D.C. Regulated as hell. Signature Packaging and Paper. Number 83, a little bit over $21 million. They have 63 employees. Dennis Vinson is the CEO. The type of business is paper and packaging services. Jackson, Missouri. Man, what's going on in Missouri? All right, let's see. And I mean that in a positive way because Missouri keeps popping up here. Chase Sources, I guess it's limited partnership. Anthony Chase, type of business. Oh, they have 40 employees, $23 million in revenue. Type of business, staffing and facilities management, Houston, Texas. Okay, Chase Source LP. Oh, hold on, I just read that. Okay, New England Greens, a little bit over $24 million, 30 employees. Ted Parker, CEO. Nutritional Supplements, and they're out of Shelton, Connecticut. TW Constructors, LLC, $28 million. They're coming in at number 80, 68 employees. Todd Weaver is the CEO. Business, type of business is contracting, construction management. Also out of St. Louis, Missouri. All right, JMA Solutions, 132 employees, Janice M. Adams. They're in the business of air traffic control and engineering, headquartered out of D.C., Washington, D.C. Tag Holdings, LLC, 78. Wixom, Michigan. Joseph B. Anderson, Jr., CEO, 133 employees, over $30 million in revenue. Mechanical parts supply and warehousing. Let's see. Tag Holdings. Oh, I just read that. Okay. Brody Contractors, ranked at 77. Calvin Brody, Raleigh, North Carolina, $31 million. Business contracting construction. Golden Crest Franchising comes in at a little bit over $32 million, 76th rank. Out of Bronx, New York, Alvin Novus is the CEO, 250 employees. They're in the business of restaurant franchising, food manufacturing. Okay. Rick Enterprise Group, a little bit over $34 million, 312 employees. Roderick Rickman is the CEO, located in Detroit, Michigan, business of industrial environmental cleaning and facility management. Coming in at, let's see, 74. Howard Strick Holdings, 125 employees there in the multimedia business, Washington, D.C. Armstrong Williams is the CEO of that, a little bit over $35 million. Okay. Keystone Electrical, Frederick Bowie, 85 employees. Des Moines, Iowa, man, it's cold there during the wintertime. See, they're in the business of electrical manufacturing, engineering services, 85 employees. B&S Electric Supply Company, a little bit over $35 million, 30 employees. Clarence W. Roby, out of Hotlanta. They're in the electrical equipment supply. That's what they do. Number 71, General Microsystems, a little bit over $36 million, 20 employees. Earl W. Overstreet the second, they're in the business of business IT, Bellevue, Washington, headquarters. Advanced Systems Development, Richard Bennett, they're in the IT business and politics and services, Alexandria, Virginia, that's right outside of D.C. W3R Consulting, $40 million. Eric A. Harding, CEO, business IT consulting, Southfield, Michigan, that's right outside of Detroit, literally. 336 employees. Let's see. Went up here a little bit. Let's see. Let's jump up to let's go to 16. Baldwin Richardson Foods. They're out of Overbrook Terrace, Illinois. Eric G. Johnson is the CEO. They're in food services, 350 employees. They did $352 million. I'm skipping around as we go up here. matter of fact, let's go to the top 10. All right, the top 10. Coming in at number 10, and this has been mentioned on this podcast before by Brother Bianchi, Hightower's Petroleum Company, revenue over $434 million in revenue. That's 2018, though. Okay. Employees, 52, CEO, Stephen L. Hightower. Type of business, petroleum products and distribution, Middletown, Ohio. That's where he's headquartered. Coming in at number 9, Urban One, $440 million. Employees, 1,058. CEO, Alfred C. Liggins III. They're in the multimedia business, headquartered in Silver Spring. I remember when they were in D.C., and they were just WOL. Let's see. Anderson DuBose, company over $702 million in revenue, 543 employees. Warren E. Anderson is the CEO. Food prep and paper products distribution, Lordstown, Ohio. Coming in at number 7, Thompson Hospitality at $760 million. 6,000 is Warren W. Thompson. Food Facilities Management, Quick Services Restaurant, headquartered in Washington, D.C. That's part of the DMV. Bridgman Foods, $870 million. They have 20,000 employees. Ryan Bridgman is the CEO. Quick Service Restaurants, Louisville, Kentucky. Coming in at number 5, Modular Assembly. Okay. Roger Assembly Innovations, LLC, revenues of over $1 billion. And, okay, I'm waiting for, oh, man, I hit it. 1, 2. I'm trying to get information for you guys. Okay. Here we go. Modular Assembly Innovations, LLC. Okay. Located in Dublin, Ohio. Let's see. Automotive parts. That's the business that they're in. Okay, all right. Next one is Coca-Cola Beverages, Florida, LLC, $1.3 billion. Let me see if we can get you a tad bit more information on that. Coca-Cola Beverages Florida is a family-owned independent Coca-Cola bottler. Coca-Cola Florida exclusive territory covers 18 million consumers across 47 counties. Now, Florida's got a total of 67 counties, so they've got well over half. 47 counties, and includes the major metropolitan markets of Jacksonville, Miami, Orlando, Tampa. Coke Florida sells, manufactures, and distributes over 600 products of the Coca-Cola Company and other partner companies. Located, man, this is just 30 minutes away from where I'm at right now. Located in Tampa, Florida. The type of business, beverage bottling and warehousing. Staff, 4,800. The CEO is Troy D. Taylor. And once again, it's a family-owned business. And we're going to attempt to, well, not attempt, we're going to get some of these people on here. We got a guest, thanks to Bianchi, for next Friday. And we're working on another one for next week as well. Because if we mention Michael Jackson, we all know who he is. If we mention LeBron James, we all know who he is. But when it comes to business, you know, business billionaires, black ones, we don't know who they are. I think something's wrong with their picture. All right, now we've got 3 more billion-dollar companies here that are all black. Well, they're not all black, but the CEOs are black and they run the companies. So, we shall be back momentarily.
I don't think people necessarily understand what happened last week with the Great Make America Great Again hat. What are you trying to do with the message you're sending?
Well, it was really just my subconscious. It was a feeling I had, you know, like people were taught how to think, we're taught how to feel. We don't know how to think for ourselves. We don't know how to feel for ourselves. People say feel free, but they don't really want us to feel free. And I felt a freedom in, first of all, just doing something that everybody tells you not to do.
I just love Trump. That's my boy. Like, you know, it's like so many rappers, you'll look at a video of Snoop Dogg loving Trump, but then he get in the office and now they don't love him. Like, Trump is one of rap's favorite people,
no,
right?
But we talk about this, that before he was elected president, people in hip-hop, it was an in thing to put Donald Trump in your rhyme somewhere.
Yeah. And by the way, I am in hip-hop, but I'm not just in hip-hop. I'm a black person in a black community, but I'm not just that. I feel like one thing is people try to minimize me to artists, hip-hop, black community. Yeah, I'm always going to represent that, but I also represent the world. When you hear about slavery for 400 years, for 400 years, that sounds like a choice. Like, you was there for 400 years and it's all of y'all? You know, like, it's like we're mentally in prison. I like the word prison because slavery goes too direct to the idea of blacks. It's like slavery, Holocaust Jews, slavery is blacks. So prison is something that unites us as one race, blacks and whites being one race, that we're one, we're the human race. Do you feel that I'm feeling, do you feel that I'm being free and I'm thinking free?
I actually don't think you're thinking anything. I think what you're doing right now is actually the absence of thought. And the reason why I feel like that
is because Kanye, you're entitled to your opinion. You're entitled to believe whatever you want. But there is fact and real world, real life consequence behind everything that you just said. And while you are making music and being an artist and living the life that you've earned by being a genius, the rest of us in society have to deal with these threats to our lives. We have to deal with the marginalization that has come from the 400 years of slavery that you said for our people was a choice. Frankly, I'm disappointed, I'm appalled, and brother, I am unbelievably hurt by the fact that you have morphed into something, to me, that's not real. Bro, you gotta be responsible, man.
Bro, I'm sorry
you
hurt you.
You gotta be responsible.
I'm sorry I hurt you,
man,
bro.
Bro, your voice is too big. You gotta...
One person plays the victim role and lives 400 years in the past, and the other one is a billionaire in this lifetime. That's what we're going to be putting out stuff like this three times a week. Going back to Black Enterprise Top 100, and this is from the 2018 list. Number three. Bringing in a revenue of over $1.9 billion in yearly revenue is Bridgewater Interiors, LLC. Bridgewater Interiors is an automotive seating manufacturing company specializing in just-in-time manufacturing, sequencing, and delivering of seating, overhead, and center console systems. It currently assembles systems across 15 distinct car models for four automotive manufacturers at its three facilities in Michigan and one in Alabama. The CEO is Ronald E. Hall Jr. They have a staff of 2,400 people. Okay. Coming in at number two, black billionaires, black billionaire companies. They're black billionaires. Because you got black American billionaires, you got black Canadian billionaires, you have black Caribbean billionaires, you have black African billionaires. And you have black billionaire companies. Of course, when you're on that level, it's just billions. You don't need to put a color to it. Coming in at number two on Black Enterprises Top 100, industrial companies. Coming in at ranked number two. This is a 2018 list, mind you. At $2.8 billion, Act One Group is a global enterprise that provides employment, workforce management, and procurement solutions to a wide range of industries, Fortune 500 organizations, local and mid-market companies, and government agencies. It operates in 19 countries across the world with over 17,000 clients and over 2,600 employees worldwide. Janice Bryant Howroyd is the CEO. You know what's interesting? None of these companies have made their money through government entitlement programs. None of these companies are asking for reparations from the government, local, state, or federal, and none of the CEOs on the reparations bandwagon. I'm just saying, it's just an observation. Just an observation. And all of these CEOs are living in the same country as the guy that said he was deeply and profoundly hurt by Kanye's words or whatever. Same country. Same set of rules. Just saying. Coming in at number one. On, this is a book from the year 2018. And next week we'll get the most current list. Coming at number one in Black Enterprise Top 100 industrial businesses, okay, is Worldwide Technology. They have revenues of over $11 billion. See, one of the things I'm learning from this is this, and I'm putting this out for the reparations crowd. The reparations crowd, none of them, they got to agree on, you know, what form of reparations should take. I mean, is it going to, like in Evanston, they're going to start off with housing reparations in the form of, you know, grants for either down payments or repairs valued at $25,000. Okay. Some people want the city to cut a check. Others want the United States government to cut a check. Some people want the federal government to come up with a big pot of trillions of dollars and then either cut a check or free tuition. I mean, you know, go free college tuition. There's a whole bunch of ideas out there right now. But they're looking for someone outside of themselves, the government, state, federal, or local, to come up with something. In Evanston, you've got a group of people. Some say, I want this. Others say they don't want what's been presented. You know, the council came up with something with the house, you know, to start off with. But what's interesting about this top 100 is they decided how much they wanted their revenues to be. I think the lowest figure I read today was like $4.7 million and getting up to number one. Over $11.2 billion in revenue. type of business that WWT is in? Oh, Jesus. Man, what's going on in Missouri? Okay. IT products and services. They have a staff of 5,378. The CEO is David L. Stewart, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. But, and I said it yesterday and I'll say it again, there's nobody on the Forbes 400. There's no company ever that's ever been in the Fortune 500. And now, but see, most, I can hear people saying right now, but they're mostly white people, okay? Well, today we've just done part of the Black Enterprise Top 100 Industrial Business. There's never been in the history of the Black Enterprise Top 100 businesses not a single company that has been ranked, that has taken in, that has gotten wealthy or made the list due to government entitlement programs. Not one. There's no billionaire come a billionaire because of government giveaway programs. Not one. Now, and that's why we're bringing in other, you know, other distinctions as the weeks go by. Top 100 bloggers, top 100 emerging industries, top 10 black townships, and we'll probably extend that past 10 because there's a lot of them out there. Because a lot of people just need to become aware of what's out here. Top 10 emerging emerging countries, we'll probably extend that list. Top 10 extreme home manufacturers, top 10 Generation Zs, top 10 black landowners, top 10 black ranchers. In any event, so, and then like I say, next Friday we already have that guest lined up, and then I just got to do a return phone call this afternoon, and thank you, Bianchi, for those two. So if anybody, if you've got somebody who owns a business that we can feature on here, just let us know so we can get them on here. And then on April, I believe 23rd, that's a Friday, next month, the last Friday in April, Freeway Rick Ross, he'll be on here. I was going to do an OnlyFans thing. Forget that. Well, we're just going to roll it into our regular podcast, which is free to listen to. And then you can call and ask him direct questions. So it'll be business as usual. And we'll say the OnlyFans thing for working events. But we'll give you more on that later. But it'll be just like it is now. All right, so let's go to 314. I want to know what's going on in the state of Missouri that makes Missouri an attractive place for black entrepreneurs. And good morning.
In Missouri. Good morning, L.A. I'm so happy to hear you have such an inspiring, focused, progressive, and full of wealth conversations, topics to speak on. And let me know the days you go back to that old general run-of-the-mill. I'm going to take a vacation on those two days.
No, I think I'm going to let everybody else concentrate on that stuff. Because
yeah,
more people need, you know, I mean, you were right yesterday, including me. people need to be exposed to the positive things that are going on.
Absolutely.
In many cases, have been going on. And then, like I say, you can get the reparation stuff. You can get the all that other stuff.
All
there's
kneeling.
Plenty of podcasts and YouTube videos on that.
Yeah, all that kneeling and tearing out windows and stuff and carrying on like that. That makes Michael Jordan richer. You know that. You know how that goes on? Because those sports stores have to reorder.
Mm-hmm.
So they place the order twice a year rather than just the once on products that he sponsors. So when you have fools come in and tear up the stores and be stealing and going along with some of these politicians telling the police that they think that the person needs the stuff, don't arrest them. Well, those stores, after they get the insurance payout, they're reordered to stock their stores again. So you can't get by the person who are doing it. Yes, the person who are doing and took these chances and have positioned themselves, they're always going to be on top. This thing about closing the gap in economics, equity and stuff, that's a farce. Once a person get out ahead, they just sit back and let things happen by themselves. Look at Oprah. When she went over a billion, and she done sold a lot of those instruments that helped her get there because things, times change. But when she had that type of capital, that capital works itself. And it would just grow by itself. I remember when Leaky Dangote was worth maybe about $1 billion. Now look where he's at now. And he has nothing to do but to continue to grow up. I project he'd probably be worth over $100 billion here pretty soon. Carlos Slim, same way.
And Dangote, I'm glad you brought him up. That's another reason why I'm taking a cue from what you said yesterday with three times a week minimum on this is because a lot of people are not aware of who he is. They know who LeBron James is, but Dangote and others dwarf any athlete, professional athlete. They dwarf him in wealth.
Well, yes, he made his money in Africa and in other parts of the world. But guess where he's opening up an office? Because he see all the opportunities. He's opening an office in New York. And guess who he's going to be dealing with is probably to tag on to, add on to, join on to. It's going to be those Nigerians that's here already that's doing business. He's going to be a partner with them and probably also an investment capital. Wonder why come he's not going to do it with black Americans? Well, because he's a Nigerian. He does not identify as black. His identity is Nigerian. And the part that he further represents based on his language or traditional style. But you made mention about St. Louis.
Well, Missouri, because they had a cup, not only St. Louis, but, I mean, St. Louis as a core was well represented. But they also had at least two other companies, I think I mentioned, that were in Missouri. So what's going on, what's happening in Missouri, and particularly St. Louis, that's good to black entrepreneurs?
Well, I know a couple of them. I know the Roberts brothers, Mike and Steve Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
They're the house that sits there on the corner of Kings Highway and Lindell. And behind their house on the other side is the Crutcher's house where the activists tore down the fence to get onto a gate, to get onto a private street, talking that Black Lives Matter stuff, threatening them folks' house, and they came out with their guns, which I don't blame them.
Oh, I remember, that picture, yeah.
Yeah, they stayed there. They built a whole building just for the indoor swimming pool there. But Mike Robinson used to be worth a whole lot more in assets. They had problems during the downtown turn. I think they was about one or two steps out of billionaire status. Todd Weaver, I know him. He broke off from Clayco Construction Company, which I'd done some projects for. a school in Normandy School District called Lucas and Hunt Crossing was one, and probably some others. I just don't can't keep up with him. But he's young. He's a young African American. He used to live, I think he lived in Kennelock. You've heard of Kennelock before, haven't you?
I heard of him.
One of them old black towns. And I think his mother died. And he used to go over, Clayco must have been doing a job in that area, and he used to go sweep out the trailers.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't think of the guy who owns Clayco's name. I think it's Peter, but I'm not sure. He used to give him that job. Then he found out that his mom died, and he had became attached to the young man. This is a white guy.
Mm-hmm.
So he adopted him. He adopted this black child, Todd, and the rest is history. And apparently at some point in time after working for Clayco, he's ventured out on his own because the opportunity exists. One of the reasons why I started Steel Erection in the St. Louis and Southern Illinois market, because it was tremendous opportunity there. And, you know, I've been doing that since I was 19. Because I started doing it myself on my own. And you have David Stewart with Worldwide Technologies. They're located out in Maryland, right there on 270. They just built a new building. They used to be in Maryland Heights off of Dorset Road. They had a small building. Then they built a bigger complex there off of 270 along the corridor. David Stewart donates about $750,000, his personal money, toward the Republican Party in Missouri.
Okay.
Missouri is a Republican state. It's a red state. Highly, highly pro-business and anti-high taxes. So the party, the members of the party, works for businesses. So black businesses that start up in that state, they have an opportunity to strive.
I see. Okay.
If you look at the other black business, like the one that's in the automotive field, and if you look at the top 20, and I forget how many of them is in automotive field. I think that have changed over the years because of a whole lot of reasons. But I think you had about at least six that was in the automotive industry. And that guy, Bridgewater, I think he, wasn't he an NBA basketball player at one time?
I don't know.
Somebody like that.
I know.
I don't know.
Dave Bing was out of Detroit.
Bing, yeah, that's right.
Dave Bing, yeah, he was. Yeah, he was also mayor of Detroit at one time.
Yeah, you're right about that. But you got Bridgewater, you got Module Assembly. Bridgewater is three. Interiors, Module Assembly is five. And it looked like at one time it was about Global Automotive is 13, so that's three of them. You could say Millennium Steel, but because I believe that's the type of steel products that they make, is like chassis and so forth. So you can say there's four in the top 20.
Mm-hmm.
And Georgetown Metal Processing, they probably in the automotive industry, that's five. So you probably got five or six that's in the automotive industry in the top 20 black businesses. You got H.J. Russell, number 25. He's in construction. His company was the manager of the Mercedes Dome there in Atlanta. And he's done a lot in construction.
No, you're talking about Herman Russell.
He's
deceased now, isn't he?
Yeah, he's passed away.
Well, his company's still going on.
Yeah, his company is still going. It kind of took a different direction. I don't know whether it was the market, but he's starting to get off into the more
housing and renovation.
Okay.
Housing doesn't produce the type of revenue that commercial construction does.
True.
But, you know, you got to keep your people working. And whenever you got a company that's running 50 employees, that is a lot of employees.
That
is. I ran 50 or 75 employees. And I had my main ones that I kept working for me all the time. No matter if it was raining or what, they were guaranteed 40. But you got companies here that's got, what, 2,000 employees? Now, that there is a heck of a network. And just to make payroll for that type of employee load is a hell of a thing. I mean, when you're making that type of payroll, you got to pay – you got to turn those payroll taxes over to the IRS the next day. Some small businesses got a month to pay, turn those payroll taxes over. Some have the following week. And like these big ones, they got to turn that money over the next day. That's when the IRS stipulates. So look at these. Then you go into the financial services. You got in the banking and the investments, you got One United. And you know who's behind the CEO of One United, don't you?
No, who?
Well, if you pull up, click on the pull down on finances, and you go to One United,
see,
which has 656 million.
Okay. Hold on, One United. Hold on, it's One United Bank, but you don't want that, do you?
Yeah, One United Bank.
Oh, okay. All right, wait a minute. One United Bank, Little River, Florida.
Well, yeah, go to the under finances, the very one at the top. He's number one under financial services.
Oh, okay. Hold it. I'm not on Black Enterprise for that. Wait a minute. One United. Doggone it. All right, One United. Okay, Kevin Coey.
Now, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I know the incident, I know the name, and I know the players, but I think that's Maxine Waters' husband. And back during the time when you had the financial crisis, I think she done something to ensure that their services weathered the storm, if we can put it like that. But, you know, it's all good. Nothing wrong with that.
Well, her husband is, well, hold it. Well, she's been married more than once. Oh, let's see. It's Sidney Williams, and then there's Edward Waters. Sorry, Edward Waters, he's out of the picture. So, Sidney.
Her husband sat on their board. So, you can do Maxine Waters and One United, and I think the story will pop up. But she was never found to have done anything wrong, but that's the way things work. And they're located in, of course, Los Angeles, Boston, and Miami.
A claim in 2010, Maxine Waters steered, now this is just a claim, but she wasn't indicted, steered $12 million in TARP funds to her husband's private bank account. She was indicted,
now, let me tell
but
you,
served no time.
Let me tell you how politics play with helping black financial services get off on a positive foot. If you control the school board, you control City Hall, and maybe one or two other entities, then you can direct
you can put things in motion where they have to put X number of dollars in these financial services holdings. If the comptroller, like in St. Louis, Darlene Green, she can steer money into these black holding companies, which is nothing wrong. I mean, that's what you're supposed to do. And that helps them to get on a good foot. It's, now, for me, my thinking, I think that's the best on these investment firms than the banks. Because the investment firms will help to create and support larger business enterprises. Banks is just there to deal directly with the public and the services that they offer. Cash checking, savings account, Christmas clubs, providing debit cards, providing credit cards. And the services that you provide, for instance, like with Bank of America card, on some of the cards, like they prefer customers and they platinum. Did you see that email I sent you with my Bank of America card and a big chunk of gold I had sitting on top of it?
You know, one of those I opened up or attempted to open up, and it had some kind of it didn't translate for whatever reason. I think it was that one.
Yeah, it was just a picture. I could have sent it another way. Anyway, those cards like that, every time you make a purchase in a certain location, like I use one for nothing but gas.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a period of time, you have accumulated, and you can accumulate thousands of dollars on that card just from the discounts that it gathers when you shop at certain places. See, the price that you're paying for an item don't necessarily reflect the store's price. What's in the price in that item is discounts. And those discounts are afforded as perks that charge cards company can use and offer to get customers to come their way.
Mm-hmm.
So they say for every purchase you make, you get X number of dollars back. X number of cents back, X number of percentage back, and sooner or later, it all accumulate. And, you know, that's the way companies can also increase your credit line on your credit card. Then the same thing in a different way may happen with your debit card. So those are good things, L.A., if you use them right.
Yep.
But no, Missouri, and if you look at all those companies, you would generally find that they probably are operating out of red states because the policies of, say, like a Donald Trump is more conducive for business. And actually,
you know, that's
too.
A very good point. You're right.
See, I can't support
less
no politician.
Government.
Yeah, the politicians that attract certain segments of the population, a large segment of the population, that always get the attention of the news and have cameras in their face and microphones in their face, I can't support that because it's going against your interests.
Mm-hmm.
More government, free trade rather than fair trade, and taxation. When you're working on percentages in certain businesses, like, for instance, in the grocery stores, you're working on percentages, and very narrow, narrow percentages. The food that spoils, or the food that goes beyond expiration date in a grocery store that sits on the shelf, that food, to get rid of it, is a tax deduction.
Right.
Certain foods that a grocery store has that's a normal display loses money in the black community every time because blacks don't eat that stuff. Blacks don't do the gelatins that's in some of your display cases You know, all them different colors than the gelatins. Black stew fried chicken. See, they have a hot menu in stores in the hood that serve fried chicken, corn, candy yams, so on, so on, so on. Fried fish. Some stores, you let you pick what fish you want. We're fried right here. Friday, they pack with black folks. You go out in the white communities, they don't do that. Not to the great extent. So
you're right.
So in a grocery store, they have a division that prepared the delicatessen foods. I mean, it's just a natural. It's a process. It's like McDonald's. When you go in McDonald's, they got the French fries located here. They got this located there and such and such and such and such. That there is a setup. It's natural. So in the delicatessen, they're going to do the same thing. I mean, whoever's doing that is going to say, well, we can't just break it out like this for black stores and white stores. Next thing you know, you have people come here and saying we're being racist. So they just take the loss because they're going to throw their stuff away because blacks don't eat it.
Right.
The salads, some of the salads they don't eat. So
good,
those are very
good observations.
The margin on the profits in grocery stores is one thing. Another thing that's missing in these top 100, you see a lot of service orientated. You don't see no heavy industry. You don't see mining. You don't see heavy industry like shipping and timber. Those are lacking in when you look at the top black 100.
Yeah, you know, I've read that list over the years, and you're right. I can't recall any of those type of businesses ranked in the top 100 industrial companies. Because they have list before they broke it up. They used to have in the top 100. They used to have a lot of automobile dealerships, but there were so many of them. They separated it until they have their own. They do the top 100 automobile dealerships, which is, you know, service-oriented. And then they have the black industrial.
Yeah.
But
I used to have – there's a black company that makes electric cars. I think it's Mills, M-I-L-L-S.
Yeah, is it MIMS?
MIMS, yeah, MIMS.
Yeah, MIMS.
But I don't see them on there. I don't know what happened to them. You know, you also get involved in the politics. That's why you got to be able to buy your politicians in order to get your position where you can't be, you know, leveraged out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's white supremacy. When you look at the top automobile manufacturers, that's white supremacy. Actually, it's yellow supremacy, too, now.
Yeah, because a lot of the Chinese manufacture that stuff.
Well, Chinese trying to get in. Well, yeah, Japanese cars.
Yeah.
And
Japanese,
other than white,
yeah, Japanese and Chinese, yeah.
Right, you got the three makers. I don't know if Chrysler's still around. You got Germany, and you got the
Toyota.
Yeah, you got, might as well say, well, that's Asian. So
okay.
Yeah, but the whites control the biggest lion's share of it, from what I understand. Especially when you start getting into trucking and so on, so on, so on. So that's what I describe as white supremacy. Then you got the other social description of white supremacy, which applies anytime a white person sneezes or coughs.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have to see what's out here. And because, like, you know, and opportunities and, you know, instead of
all kind of opportunities in the United States.
Yeah, the
United States has got to kick it up. So I wish that there was more. See, these blacks on top on Black 100 is helping to make the United States strong, making the United States gross domestic product strong.
Mm-hmm.
That's what determines its ranking in the world, and it has to be strong because if not, another country is going to come in and take over like a China,
and you're going to start experiencing a whole different ballpark, especially along your financial means. And these things are not a given. They had to be put in place through all sorts of things, including wars. If the United States see a need, the people to be see a need to have to go kick somebody's ass, I'm for it because it makes the country stronger. It eliminates your competition. Now, if you want to give your competition away, you might as well give your money away rather than going through the process. Iran is trying to get nuclear weapons. You got another country out of nowhere trying to get nuclear weapons. One of those countries that was involved in Gulf Wars, Iraq or somebody, I forget who it is. They do that because now they can call you a bluff, call you a dare. At this recent conference they had in Alaska where China was involved, you had Chinese diplomats that were just kicking America's ass because of Joe Biden. They would dare not do that if Donald Trump was sitting in office. They were scared of Donald Trump because he came right out and told you what he was going to do. And that's good for a black business. For those who know
well,
what he's looking at.
That's why we'll be putting out the information so people can become more aware of their options, options and opportunities. Yeah. On that note, Pianki, we're going to sign off for this week. Have a good weekend. Everybody have a good
All
weekend
right,
and
see
a safe
you.
Weekend. All right.